undergraduate degree was in textile engineering. Went to graduate school in Charlottesville at ITT, and as many graduate students do, you get a little bit involved in teaching, and all of a sudden, I thought, I like the classroom activities. I like the challenges that go on. So my career deviated a little bit from saying I wasn't going to go into a textile mill, perhaps, but I would go into textile education and combine the best of both areas. So I did that, worked 5 years at what is now Philadelphia University, but was then Philadelphia College of Textiles and Science. Went back down to ITT as the dean of that program and a very small, specialized 2-year master's program. Stayed there some 21 years, went through a lot of different activities there. And then the opportunity came to come to NC State. And the carrot that was out there that said, why did I want to leave Charlottesville, which Cheryl and I were enjoying immensely, was the concept of the Centennial Campus, which I just thought was absolutely phenomenal, quite visionary. And for what my background had been, with particular emphasis on applied research, because that's what we did at ITT, that I could see that all coming together on this campus with the tremendous fundamental research history that we have, and that would all fit together perfectly. So that was it.
And you served as dean of college of textiles.
Yes. I guess we spent the first 3 or 4 years getting ready for the move. I came in 1987, and we physically moved in January of 1991 to the Centennial Campus. So when I arrived on campus, the plans were well developed. I think the architects for the college here had done a great job with interacting with the faculty and coming up with a plan that was going to fit faculty's needs and be very flexible in many ways and really allowed us to go on into the future. Once we got on campus, then it was a question of beginning the transition to go from one to the other. And that meant a tremendous amount of work with industry, because one of the things we couldn't afford to do was to move into a new building and take all the old lab equipment we had from Nelson Hall and David Clark Laboratories. So we spent a lot of time with industry friends, a lot of time with just alumni, trying to raise funds so that we could actually augment the very generous funding that was granted by the state of North Carolina. Absolutely.
And textiles was, I guess, the first.
Yes. I brought this along for your archives. You should. Have you seen that?
I've heard about it.
You've heard about that. Well.
And was going to ask about it.
The first day I showed up on campus, which was July 1st, 1987, two of the associate deans were literally standing out in the doorsteps of Nelson Hall saying, there's a white paper on your desk that you might want to read now. The white paper basically said that the textile faculty and certainly the previous dean did not see the advantages of the Centennial Campus. In fact, they saw many more disadvantages than advantages. That they had voted, according to the paper, unanimously not to go to the Centennial Campus. So that wasn't exactly how I thought my first day of work or my first month of work was going to be at work here, was going to be focused. And when you read the article, you know, it was unanimous, but it was the dean and 10 other people signed it, and you know, we had 40-some people on campus, so that there were a lot of abstentions. And anyway, we put that behind us relatively quickly, and just said, you know, the move is going to come, and let's figure out how to make it beneficial to everyone concerned.
Where was the resistance coming from? What were some of the people that might have been on that?
It's interesting. There were two main reasons, and then probably a political reason is the third one. One was some people saw this as an industrial campus. They didn't get the whole picture yet that industry and academics and government can fit together very properly, and that you don't have to be, because you're co-located, doesn't mean you have to be influenced in any of your decisions by outsiders. So that was one. There's a second then that was really around NC State, was as a land-grant university, I felt there were always some people who thought that, this was not quite the university of the traditional university, the traditional European university. And therefore, this was a step further removed from being that traditional university. And that worried them a little bit. They didn't see this as a university model, well, as I saw it as a university model of the future. And that's why I wanted to make sure that you had been able to talk to the Chancellor Poulton, because really, he, I think, is one of the major people who saw that coming. And I admire him for having that vision.
And he talked about,
yes.
What were some of the benefits that Exiles enjoyed from being located out here?
You can take any measurement that you want to measure that at a university, whether it's student enrollment, whether it's student satisfaction with the courses, whether it's the amount of generated research dollars, whether it's the amount of short courses and all that, and they went up significantly when we came to the Centennial campus. And I remember going down once, being asked to go down to testify before some subcommittee of the North Carolina legislature. And what I was able to point out in that is that we didn't have any more faculty when we came here. I mean, we moved out with exactly the same faculty. And here at some point in time is where all these numbers fit in. Prior to coming to the Centennial campus, and here significant higher numbers were after we've been here. And what the only thing that had changed is basically the opportunity to take new laboratories, new classroom technologies, and develop things, develop curriculums, develop research programs, develop extension programs that benefited the industry and us simultaneously. Yes, and we were the pioneers, but it, I never felt we were isolated. And again, part of there was some very in that paper that, and I don't even know where that paper is. I think I threw all of them away. That was white papers, and I hope there's one somewhere. But they raised such issues as, well, how are we going to get from one campus to another? Well, you know, this is 1987. We're not going to move out here to 1991. Don't worry. I mean, are we going to have a bus system? Well, how are we going to change classes? Well, to me, it was very simple. I don't know how we're going to change classes, except if the university changes classes on the hour, we're going to change classes on the half hour. And I did not see the logistics problems that some people seem to see. And interestingly enough, when we were going through all of this, someone sent me over to the library and said, look at the complaints made by the textile faculty when we moved from Caldwell, I think we were initially, down to Nelson Hall. And there was this huge, great, big furor among the faculty that the trains going past Nelson Hall were going to interrupt the very sensitive scientific instrumentation that we were going to have in this building. So any move is difficult. And I think, faculty are very anxious to discover new things and to do new things, but when it comes to picking up and moving, somehow they seem to say, that's not what I want to do.
I know you had a role in bringing about the National Textile Center.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you talked about that.
Sure.
But, I mean, first of all, what is it?
All right. Well, let's look at some history. when going through the archives here, Dean Hamby and his associate deans and others in the college had made a proposal to the federal government about establishing, I don't think they call it the National Textile Center, but a center of excellence here at North Carolina State University. And that had happened 2 years, 3 years previously to when I came. And so my feeling at that time, I was in Virginia, I said, well, you know, who died and made NC State king? Why should they be the National Textile Center? And the people at Clemson were saying the same thing, the people at Georgia Tech and the people at Auburn. So that idea was a great spark of an idea, but it was never going to get through Congress because it just simply did not have the support necessary to get funded. So then we came in, and actually we had lost a we had gone for a national science engineering laboratory, and we were one of five. College of Engineering and College of Textiles, the joint program, were one of the five recommended to be funded. But in that same recommendation was the electronics center here, microelectronics center here on campus. So they won and we lost. But we had $500,000 in real cash from the industry. So we took that $500,000 and did some of these projects ourselves. And the industry liked them. And the things that was different about them is they required an interdisciplinary research activities. It was not going to be one faculty member with one student solving all the problems in the world. The key was that the problems in the industry, in any industry, are difficult, and they require different disciplines. And so we were successful with that. And then I went to so two of the key advisors that we had on that. One was Dr. Joe Cunning, who was director of research at DuPont. And Jerry Kogan, who's director of research at Milliken, big textile companies, and said, I'd like to expand this and pull in all these other universities because we were not going to get that. We weren't going to get funding by ourselves. We were going to have to use our political clout. And part of that also came from Frank Hart and Jimmy Suttle, who Frank, I think at that time, was vice chancellor for research. And he said, why aren't you guys out there working together? So that's... It started that way. There was some interesting dynamics. By pure chance, the four initial companies or universities were State and Clemson and Georgia Tech and Auburn, and all four of these had new deans or department heads within a two-year period. So we didn't have any excess baggage about it. We all came in saying we want to do something different, and this was our opportunity to do something different.
Okay. What does
Okay, sure. What it did is we never had whenever we would go to Congress or compete for contracts, everybody said, "Well, the textile industry, you know, that's a dying industry. Why do we want to worry about that? What are they doing? They make socks, shirts, and underwear," and they didn't understand really what the capabilities were. And so what we foresaw here was that because of the political structure in Washington, that a lot of the Congress, both legislators and senators, had seniority positions within Washington, and these people mainly were from the southeastern states, and collectively they had voting power. So if we could get funding from the federal government to support research, faculty, and basically that's it, fundamental research. And we made some agreements that we're not going to build buildings, and we're not going to duplicate anything that we have. We're just going to conduct research, and we're going to have a structure for this such that the industry puts input onto and suggests the general areas that we should be working in, and we present proposals. And I think having NC State here made a huge big difference because we could go to Washington and say, well, look, here's, we don't need a new building. We've got a new building here. We don't need new facilities. We've got them here. And we were able to show the increase in all of the metrics we were talking about earlier. So this became a kind of a rallying point, a flag will say, look, it's here, and the NTC is going to be a virtual organization. We're going to communicate by emails and do everything that way. And it's worked out very well. And it's still going, I don't know, 12, 15 years later. We had contracts written about what percentage of the dollars would basically come to NC State, what percent of the federal dollars would go elsewhere.
You've done this already, but I wanted to touch more on the mixed major symphony campus. How successful you've been in forming corporate partnerships or governmental partnerships?
I think the mixed format has been the key to the Centennial campus. We have been less successful with textiles. Unfortunately, we spent a lot of time in the early stages trying to convince TC Square, the Technology Clothing Textile Corporation, that they should move to the Centennial campus. And Mr. Worsley, particularly at that time, was extremely helpful with the costs and all of that. But they felt that they could be in a park and carry at a much lower price, and they are. And we work very closely with them, but I think there still could have been a synergism that we both missed, even though we had to go back and forth. And the other large one was Cotton Incorporated. We thought we worked extremely hard on Cotton Incorporated, and they brought their entire board and spent a day with us here. I really thought we were going to win that one. And the thing that their board had trouble with on the Centennial campus was their board of Cotton Incorporated farmers, and they own the land. And they could build a building here, but they would never own the land. And to farmers, that seemed to make a difference. And we said, well, you know, we'll give you a 99-year renewable lease. What more? But you know, there's still that concept that was there. And again, we get along very well with Cotton Incorporated, and we spend a lot of time with them. But I would have hoped that all of those people would have been on the Centennial campus by themselves. But I think the concept is great that as we've expanded the College of Textiles now to include the Nonwoven Cooperative Research Center just across the street in a private building. It's not in a state building. So that
the state still owns the land.
State still owns the land. Yes.
Have there been any partnership success stories that stood out for you?
Well, I think the centers, the three centers that we have here right now are tremendous partnerships. The cooperative, the NCRC, Nonwoven Cooperative Research Center, is just a fantastic center on campus. And the nonwoven industry is growing significantly in the U.S. That's just been a great story. The TPAC, Textile Protective Clothing Center, with Pyroman and all of those things have been tremendous partnerships and that initial partnership started with DuPont, because it was the mannequin Pyroman was a DuPont basically invention, they gave us the mannequin. They actually gave us the inventor of that, or the guy who spent most of the time developing it. They loaned him to us for a 2-year period or something like that while we got started.
Just to clarify, what is Pyroman?
Pyroman is a burning mannequin. If you want to on our way out, we can walk by and give you a feeling for it. But it was what it is. It's a mannequin that has sensors, heat sensors all over its body. You dress this Pyroman in various clothing, protective clothing, whatever else you have. You submit that to a very high intense flame for a period of time. You take the flame away, and then all of these sensors are connected to a computer, and so you can then see an image of the Pyroman is printed out, and in colors it shows whether it would be first, second, or third degree burns. Very, very highly successful. In fact, that as I understand it, that center was the first center to be funded by the Homeland Security Act.
You talked already about some of the resistance you encountered with that being the first
you know, I was amazed at that. First of all, when we started this whole operation, they had a young man that came out of Mr. Worsley's office, probably out of Charlie Leffer's office at that time. It was going to be in charge of he was the university negotiator with all of these contractors and subcontractors. And Chad, I thought he was 16 years old. I've never seen anybody look so young, and we looked at him and said, how is he going to be able to negotiate with these people? They'll eat him up. And it wasn't that way at all. This young man was talented, and I'm sorry I can't think of his last name. His first name was Craig, and he's still around campus. And it was just he did a phenomenal job of doing that. The other thing that I did here in the college is we assigned one of the associate deans, Perry Grady, to do nothing but get us into the new campus. That was his assignment. And that was a great assignment because he took it very seriously and did it extremely well. But that also took the pressures off of me of having individuals complaining to me all the time. They had somewhere to go. And Perry and I would meet daily almost. And sometimes we'd end up shouting at each other. At the end of the day, we had different feelings about what we ought to be doing. And then we go drink a beer. I mean, it was good friends, so that helped. And there were a few interesting things that happened. We would come over frequently just to look at to bring prospective donors. I mean, look if you put up your equipment here, look at this laboratory and all of that. And we came up the elevator one day and got off in the atrium. Have you seen our huge, great big atrium?
Yes, sir.
All right, it's a great big atrium. And it was painted Carolina blue. It was this Carolina. I said, what in the world? Perry, get the paint chip. He said, I know I didn't do this. That's not the right color. And you can imagine, and it wasn't the right color. The painter had made an error and had to repaint. And that's a huge, big thing. The university holds a lot of functions here in that atrium. And so that was an interesting thing. We complained a little bit about the number of parking. That was another area. Faculty would complain about parking spaces. Now, I always weren't going to have enough parking. So I think George was there. Said, we'll have 200 parking slots in that parking lot. And after we got over here, and we were probably using about 100 of them, somebody went out and counted that we didn't have 200. We only had 180. I swear this is true. At least it seems that way to me. They just took those 180 slots and erased them and made 200 out of them. We have the narrowest parking slots of anybody on campus. And I swear they did it that way. The other thing that happened that might be of interest historically was when the bids were finally going to be opened. And they were opened two weeks later than they had planned it. And Cheryl and I were out with some friends skiing out in the West, and we said, we're going to go skiing. And I told Perry, don't call me. I don't want to know. We worried about it. We bid everything separate. We built the building, the bridge that goes across from here in the research center. That was bid separately. All the carpeting and everything else was bid separately because we didn't think we were going to have enough money to do what we had to do. So I told Perry, please don't tell me. When I get home, we'll worry about that. Well, the phone rings, just like yours the other day, quite early in the morning, because we're out west and he's here. I said, Perry, why did you call me? No. The bids came in, I don't know, 1.3. We got everything we wanted, and we still have $1.3 million left over. I said, oh, that's wonderful. We'll begin to think about how we can spend that. And by the time I got back to campus, George Worsley told me that wasn't my $1.3 million. It was his. And I think somebody downtown... In the treasurer's office said, no, George, it's not yours either. It's the state's. And by the time we were finished, you know, and all the problems that you run into in construction, nobody, that disappeared. So, and then the final thing on the move was they had another man, Carl, and I can't remember Carl's last name either, and he was a super guy who coordinated the move to make it as easy as possible. This was the largest move at the time that the university had ever had of taking this whole college and moving it into a new facility. And everything just seemed to work out perfectly. And we had very few problems. And we did it in two phases. We decided in January of 1991 that we would hold all classes over here, but we were not going to be able to get into our laboratories. So the laboratories were still held in Nelson. Excuse me, Nelson and David Clark. And then during that summer, we moved those laboratories over. But he did a fantastic job. Yes. And it he had a calming influence, and the faculty felt comfortable. So the university did some very, very helpful in doing all of this.
Okay,
fine.